The following Dharma talk was presented at Common Ground Meditation Center in Minneapolis, Minnesota, as part of the weekly Dharma series.
Oh, it's nice for me to begin by just appreciating being here together. Maybe that's a nice way for you to begin too. Whether you're online or here in person, just to appreciate having a community that you can drop into this way, or that I can drop into this way, and other people who care about cultivating sensitivity of heart and mind, care about living decent lives. It's nice to come together as, even as strangers, you know, some of us, most of us, maybe many of us don't know each other. We're here from all over the world this morning. And also nice to remember that this is happening in lots and lots of places, not just here at Common Ground, but people gathering this way in different Dharma communities. Yeah, I always feel connected just with this very small reflection like this. My name is Shelley Graff. I'm one of the guiding teachers here. Common Ground's been my spiritual home for just about 20 years, maybe a little bit longer. So I'm happy to be in a leadership role now and helping to guide us along. This morning, I'd like to share some reflections about mindfulness. I told my partner, some of you might have been here for the half day retreat yesterday, but before it, she asked me what I was going to teach about, and I said mindfulness. And she was like, just pause, like, is there more? So we're always teaching about it. But mindfulness is, you know, it has gained a lot of interest in the world. And there's mindfulness-based everything these days. And I think it's confusing. Like, what is mindfulness actually and what isn't it? And it colludes with the cultural habits of our time and our societies. And so mindfulness can, although it's a really great skillful means, a great strategy to pick up for just our own capacity to be present in our lives and do one thing when we're at a time when we're doing one thing, really be there for our relationships and, you know, just to actually be aware in moments. But in the Buddhist context, it's so much more than that. It's a liberative practice. And so I want to talk a little bit about how it's a liberative practice. And one of the ways that mindfulness, I think that the name mindfulness gets a little confusing in the ordinary milieu that we're swimming in, is that it collides with our, like you could do mindfulness anything and be mindful. You know, mindfulness is good no matter what you're doing, right? Can be a mindfulness-based sharpshooter, and that would be a good thing. But that's not actually what the Buddha meant. In some ways, we could say that it might be appropriate even to say that mindfulness is neutral. It doesn't have an ethical pull, right? It's just like sometimes the imagery is like it's that of a mirror. It reflects back. Mindfulness just simply reflects back what's already here, right? Like when I'm talking to a friend, I'm actually just remembering that I'm talking to a friend. Or when I'm sitting here working, you know, I'm just remembering that there's a body that's sensitive to all the activity of mind and the internal and external. So I remember to connect with that body. And those are good things. But it's also not quite right to say that mindfulness is ethically neutral, because in the Buddhist teachings, this word sama precedes all of the descriptors or all of the naming of the Noble Eightfold Path. And it's okay if you don't know what that is, but it's the way the Buddha explained how to be mindful. Like if you want to practice this path, cultivate mindfulness or sensitivity in basically every area of your life. Like that's what the Noble Eightfold Path is. It's about cultivating continuity of awareness from sunup to sundown. Yeah, nothing left out. So, and watching from the gross to the subtle. So noticing the most obvious things to the things that we don't quite pick up on most of the time, like how our views and beliefs or our attachment to views and beliefs shape our the way that we're living, just as an example, right? That's an example of the subtle. Even noticing that we're thinking is a tall order, am I right? Yeah, it's mostly we're thinking beings that don't notice we're thinking a lot of the time. And so this word sama can be translated as wise, like wise mindfulness. So it's not just your ordinary mindfulness of just being present. It comes with the whole path. Yeah, that wise can also be translated sama as complete or integrated. I really like the translation of integration because it's what is it integrated with? It's integrated with wisdom and ethics. So mindfulness is always integrated with wisdom and ethics. So in that way, mindfulness, it's not, it wouldn't be correct to say that mindfulness is neutrally ethical, right? It is inherently ethical because it always pulls in ethics. And if it's not mindfulness with ethics, then it's not really the mindfulness that the Buddha was teaching, right? And in the same way, we could say that mindfulness always pulls in wisdom. In fact, sometimes teachers will say, like one of my teachers often says, wisdom awareness, right? Because they come together, because mindfulness or awareness, two words to describe the same thing, is always pulling in a wisdom factor, right? Clear comprehension, sampajana is the Pali language here. And so sati is the Pali word for mindfulness, and it means, it translates actually as something as to remember. So mindfulness is just a kind of term that we've embraced to point back to sati. But if we think about this to remember, it actually means something like to hold in mind, right? To hold in mind. And that holding is not a forceful holding, but somewhat of a relaxed, receptive faculty. A faculty of mindfulness is receptive, like connects to what, or receives what's already here. There's a wonderful teacher, teaches mostly at Spirit Rock, Tony Bernhard, who's wrote a great book called How to Be Sick. If anybody, it was very useful to me during a period of the difficult health period. Tony lives with chronic health conditions, which she describes as feeling like she has the flu every day to varying degrees. Some days symptoms are real extreme and some days not that bad. So I feel like what I appreciate about her teaching is it's kind of, it feels like no bullshit, you know? It's like real grounded in the reality of the present moment, like what it's like to have a body that is unpredictable and that we can't rely on good health. And so she calls she describes mindfulness as caring attention in the present moment, right? That it's not just mindfulness. It's a mirror that reflects back what's already here, but in a way that's caring. Yeah. The function of love is to include. So we might say that loving mindfulness, loving wisdom awareness, to string all of that together, because in a moment in which the heart receives what's already here, it's combining all those qualities or all those faculties, right? Loving, wise awareness. And when we talk about mindfulness as a faculty, that word faculty can also be described as like a power. So it's more than something we do. This is where mindfulness kind of gets mixed up, or I notice it gets mixed up. It's like something that we make the mind do, right? We make the mind be aware. And that's what we're here to do. We're here to force awareness. We're here to force mindfulness. Anybody do that or want to do that? Yeah. Right. I come to Common Ground to force the mind to be aware, right? To control the mind. But that's not it, right? This power, that the mind has of being aware, right, is something that we can cultivate, but it's not through a kind of controlling tendency. Yeah. It's more of a receptive and relaxed habit that gains its own strength with time. So in the beginning, you know, if we're here for the first time, we might have noticed that there was very little awareness in that sitting period, right? And this is how it is for everybody because we're not, the mind has not developed that strength or that power yet. So it's like perhaps right when we sit down and close the eyes, there's a moment of noticing that we're here. And then the body's on fire and the mind is lost in thought. And then the next thing we know, the bell's ringing 30 minutes later. And that's how it goes. But that strength of just noticing and receiving the way it is in a single moment strengthens that habit to do that again. So when we talk about the mind that is concentrated or developing concentration, it's really the mind that has developed its own strength or own habit energy, the strength of that habit energy to do something again and again and again. So in the beginning, it will be like a moment of mindfulness four times during the day, like four dots, this one, then that one, and that one. Then before we go to bed, we're aware, right? And then, but with each of those moments, that habit, that capacity, that strength of mind, it just gets more developed. Yeah, we don't see that happening because it doesn't happen that quickly. But over time, it becomes a more natural habit or inclination. The habit of the mind to be aware, to receive what's actually here, is just happening. The mind, it's doing itself, so to speak. It doesn't mean that we don't need to cultivate or practice, right? We certainly do. And taking time like this on a Sunday morning is a great way to do that. Or setting aside some minutes, hour, whatever we have, 10 minutes, 30 minutes, 40 minutes, to practice in a structured way is a really great way to intentionally cultivate that strength of awareness. But it's not to control what's happening there, right? It's just to develop that strength of awareness that and remembering to include wisdom and love. So that we're not, because if we're developing a habit of control, it won't feel like love. It actually won't feel like wisdom either. It will feel tight and self-centered, like we're doing this to get somewhere, right? And we should know what that feels like, because that's what Buddhist mindfulness practice is, not that. It's a more open, spacious, connected, receptive awareness. Yeah. So even if what we're noticing is that the mind was only online four times, we're still cultivating that wise and loving awareness four times, right? That will develop its own strength with time. So, one of the places that the Buddha talked about mindfulness is in his description of the five spiritual faculties, five faculties, five powers. And this is the way practice unfolds for us. So it begins with a little bit of confidence, or maybe a lot of confidence, or faith. Sada is the Pali word, faith. Right? And that is not like a belief in something, but this capacity to be curious about what might happen here, right? What is the possibility of this? And so it doesn't have to be a lot of confidence. It's just like the amount of confidence that causes you to come to common ground. There's some confidence, right? Or like, I don't know what, I don't even believe in myself, but I'm just going to sit down on this cushion for the next 15 minutes and see what happens. There's some confidence there. We don't notice it because what's stronger is probably the doubt or a belief in ourselves, right? It might be less strong than that confidence, but there's still some confidence, even if it's slight, right? And that confidence then leads us to make some effort. Apply the spiritual fact, the faculty of energy, the mental faculty of energy directly in the cultivation of awareness. So, effort is always in service of awareness. It's not this efforting to control or get, but to receive what's already here, to receive the body, to receive what it's like, what the heart feels right now, to know that. It isn't not specific. It doesn't, mindfulness doesn't have any preferences. It doesn't matter if what we notice is something we prefer or what we don't prefer. It doesn't matter if what we notice is that the mind is just judging all the time or the subtleties of the breath. Mindfulness doesn't have a preference like that. So we apply, it just receives what's here. And we receive that with wisdom, the wisdom to understand this is just nature. That willingness to receive, that inclusion is care or love. Like, oh, I'm willing to receive and not control. And I'm willing to do that. This heart is willing to do that and not forget that this is just nature. Because the only way that we can stick and stay with experience as it is with some wisdom, right? Or else life becomes overwhelming because we're taking it all personally. We're thinking if we're seeing the mind that's judging, it's really bad news, right? Because I don't want to be a judging person. I'm here to force judging out of the mind. But that is not Buddhist mindfulness practice. We want to be able to see the mind that's judging and do our best to learn how to feel that so that the heart learns to not keep planting seeds in judgment. Okay, so there's a little bit of confidence that calls us to make some effort, right? Just the effort to be still, to remember that I care. That I care about this life. That's some effort to remember that I care about this body, to remember that I care about being a decent human, that I care about keeping these teachings in mind. That's enough effort. It's just the amount of effort that causes us to be interested in the present moment. And those wholesome aspirations or intentions will bring us back to the present moment. Right? Don't they bring you back to the present moment? Or is it just me? Hopefully it's not just me. But sometimes it's a lot simpler than we think, right? I like talking about effort because we get a lot, we get really mixed up when it comes to effort. I have gotten really mixed up. Yeah, and I fall into these tendencies to want to control the mind, like a strong-armed will. But that's not what it's not what it is. Yeah, it's a more relaxed, receptive awareness that when the heart doesn't forget that this is nature, that this is all arising because of causes and conditions. It becomes easier to feel it and to for the heart to let go on its own, right? It's not a letting go that we're actually doing. Yeah. It's not that we're forcing, like, oh no, don't do that. Right? Don't, ah, darn it. You know, thinking again, don't do that. Right? Back to the breath, mind. Stay there. Right? But the mind doesn't stay on the breath, does it? Like, not for very long, right? Doesn't for anybody because there's this habit to forget that's there often. And we want to see, like, oh, yeah, this is the way things play out, right? The mind forgets, but every moment in which the mind remembers is a moment of strengthening awareness. And how do we learn how to live a mindful life? We learn how to live a mindful life through this steady remembering, persistent remembering. So when the mind makes effort to be here, so faith, effort, mindfulness is the third. And then the fourth one is samadhi, concentration or continuity. So concentration is only one way that samadhi is described. Continuity is another way, which I like that way, right? Because it kind of brings back the imagery of the dots, the mindfulness and dots. You know, like a dot of mindfulness here and a dot of mindfulness there. You string together a lot of dots, those dots become more continuous, right? More moments of mindfulness throughout our day and throughout our lives. Yeah. So when the mind has cultivated this power of presence in one moment, it's a really natural, it feels good, right? Awareness actually feels good. So it's like, wisdom, love, and presence is all there, right? It feels like a good way to live. So when the mind connects with that reality, like, oh yeah, this is what it's like to be awake right here, and not, you know, not judging, just like pure awareness in which the heart recognizes there's no reason to take this personally, that is cultivated. And then it makes it possible to be aware in another moment. Which is what we call continuity. So it happens naturally when the heart can really take it in. Yeah. So I think I may have mentioned this last week, but those moments of when we're lost in thought and we come back and we're no longer lost in thought, we spend a lot of time judging ourselves for being lost in thought, but often forget that that's a moment of mindfulness, right? That's a moment of awareness in which it's bright and it feels like this, right? And we're connected again and it feels like this, right? Sometimes we'll feel the residue of the previous moment, but it's really good to remember, because when we remember that the mind is actually aware, right, then that habit develops stronger. That the wholesome or skillful qualities of mind are strengthened when we recognize it. The unwholesome qualities of mind are weakened when we recognize them. So when the mind knows that it's judging, we would call judging an unskillful quality of mind. When there's awareness of the judging, it's, and we lean into that just simple awareness of it, right? Instead of trying to control the judging, but just know that there's judging happening, it strengthens that faculty of awareness that's there. It gets stronger. And the mind gets better at just accepting life on life's terms, right? It just in the real ordinary sense of things. And when continuity is established, when the mind develops a stronger habit of awareness, when there's that power, right, gets more powerful, the mind is stronger, whatever, then the natural tendency is for the mind to be interested in wisdom. It's just going to happen lawfully. So it's not like we can bring something to mind, but it's probably wisdom that's actually bringing that to mind anyway. Like when we remember, oh, this is just nature, right? That's a nice thing to remember. It's a simple and easy mantra that points us back to the reality that this is arising due to its causes and conditions, not because it's my fault or anything like that. When the mind remembers that it's actually wisdom, that's the seed of wisdom is in us, right? And the seed of wisdom remembers that. And then kind of like the mind lands on it. Yeah. And it may be like very superficial, actually. Sometimes, a lot of times this happens. Like there's something very unpleasant, and I'll go, oh yeah, this is just nature. It's born of its own causes and conditions. It's coming and going. It's not as fixed as it might seem. Like even like resistance to knee pain, for example. Like the knee pain, the sensations are one thing, the resistance is another thing. Right. And I'll go like, oh, it doesn't help to resist, sweetie. This is just nature. It's like this, right? The sensations are like this. But there's not enough wisdom in the mind. There's some wisdom, though, right? There's some wisdom. And so to just be able to connect with that some wisdom, and then to find good adaptations to be able to strengthen wisdom, which might mean that I open the eyes, right? So it's not like we're forcing that controlling tendency to try to control mindfulness or make it stay. Is like that tendency to want to drive into the physical pain, right? Because we've heard that what's useful is to notice the sensations that are there. But when we drive into the physical pain, what happens? It becomes unbearable, doesn't it? Yeah, it becomes unbearable because there's also resistance happening to the physical pain. And so, in order to care, right? In order for wisdom, love, and awareness to all collide together, which is what we're doing with Buddhist mindfulness practice, then we give those conditions the space that they need to just do their dance. And so we're willing to adjust. So that might mean making an adjustment to the posture, sure. It also might mean just opening the eyes and refreshing the awareness. Like sometimes that's enough. There's an intense bodily sensation. It feels like there's only a superficial wisdom to work with it, not stronger than the defiled habits of resistance. You know, those are just human habits. And so instead, I open my eyes, take in a little light, and the physical pain, that resistance bursts, because now the mind is remembering that there's more than just this going on in this moment. There's actually sounds and sights and feelings, or maybe like, oh, That was tough, wasn't it, sweetie? Sometimes there's a little compassion that emerges on the scene. And there's a little more space to understand something a little more clearly. Like, oh wow, it wasn't just the physicality of knee, it was the mind's engagement with the knee, wasn't it? There was resistance. And the mind was so compelled by it, it got sucked in. Maybe there was a kind of unwise effort that was playing out right there. And this willingness to give all of that space then just made enough space. Now the mind is wiser and realizes, okay, it's okay to adjust, right? The efforting was misinformed. And now the efforting is, we're remembering to be relaxed. And it's more useful. So effort and mindfulness in the Noble Eightfold Path, effort precedes mindfulness. Continuity or concentration follows mindfulness. And so these are all in the same category of cultivating the stability of mind that we might call samadhi, right? And they get a little conflated. There's a wonderful story about in the scriptures about Sona, and some of you know Sona. He's very endearing to me. And the story is sweet, in which the Buddha, Sona, was practicing really diligently, persistence, found the persistence that there's this word ardent that's used to describe mindfulness. And ardent can sometimes mean with like zeal or enthusiasm. And this is a way that we get confused because we're like, go get them, that kind of zeal or enthusiasm, but it's not that. It can be like persistence, right? Ardent can be persistent. It can also include warmth of feeling, so that relaxed mind that can feel and experience and receive can be another way to describe ardent. And so Sona was practicing with a wrong effort, and it said that he was walking until the soles of his feet were bloody. And then he was defeated, you know, like, better just hang this up, I'm getting nowhere with this, right? I'm working as hard as I can. I can't work any harder on this, and just can't. The mind is not concentrated enough to see clearly, right? To develop the faculty of wisdom. Just falling into the same habits. And so Sona had this memory of his family. He's like, my family, they're good business people. I know I can be a decent business person. Maybe I'll just hang up the spiritual practice and I'll go back and live with them. And magically, the Buddha appears in some way and talks to Sona and tries to help Sona out. And what I appreciate is that the Buddha didn't scold Sona. He didn't go, Sona, you've got this all wrong. This is, you gotta work harder. You gotta work harder like this. You know, he didn't say that. What he said was like, Sona, you remember, you used to be a musician, right? And when you were a musician and you had an instrument, it would only resonate if the strings were not strung too tight or not strung too loose, right? When you find that kind of persistence that isn't over-efforting and trying to control, or that kind of persistence that isn't like, forget this, nothing matters, right? This is just a passive path anyway. That's also not wise effort, right? But when we find that right kind of effort in which the mind can be aware, right? The mind can be interested in the present moment. There's just enough and just enough effort to know that we're sitting here, right? It doesn't take much to know that you're listening right now, right? How much effort does that take? So small, right? So small, just to know that you're listening, or to know that the ears are receiving sound, or to know that the body is sitting on its cushion or chair, right? Or to know that the mind is considering what I'm saying. It takes more effort to think and think and think and problem solve, right? But just to know that you're receiving sound takes so little effort. That's the amount of effort we need in practice. The amount of effort it takes to be interested, just to keep going, to keep looking for the present moment, right? What's it like right now to be a human being? And in the days of ancient India, when Sona was probably practicing, you know, we didn't have fancy instruments like we do now, but it was probably like a handmade instrument that was strung by a handmade rope or something like that. Right. And so it didn't like have metal tuning things, whatever those are called. Sorry for those musicians. But maybe something like the rope was probably tied with a knot and it had to be constantly adjusted. It wasn't just a one-time thing. And then all of a sudden, but it was an instrument probably that fit just right with the body too, right? The body could hold it with a rope that was continued, like that we listened to and adjusted, and the sound just kept, changing a little bit, right? So that's the kind of attunement that we need in the sensitivity or attunement that we bring to our mindfulness practice to keep seeing, like, oh, what's it like right now, right? Is there enough effort being applied to just know that there's this human being that is like this? Enough effort to see clearly, oh yeah, things are like this, aren't they? Yeah, not as I want them to be, but they're actually like this. The mind is like, the heart is like this. The body is like this. Our relationships are like this. The world is like this. Like to know, oh, I don't like this. Is the heart sensitive to know what I like and what I don't like? Because if we're so busy trying to control, we won't even see that. We'll see that's just this effort to get, right? Or just this effort to avoid. That's all we're going to be doing. It won't even. A lot of the time, we don't even notice that's what we're doing. But when the heart is sensitive, relaxed, and willing to receive, then all of that added energy, that energy that it takes to try to control or demand, have goals all the time, that energy is then freed up to, is freed up. And there's enough energy to respond with a heart that cares. So it's not a passive path. It's not a path in which we just don't care. Remember, mindfulness is always that sama makes it an ethical practice. So are we being mindful? Are we cultivating being mindful? Are we cultivating this faculty of mindfulness for what purpose? Yeah. To cultivate, to seed what's good and to abandon what's unwholesome. Right, that's the classical description of wise effort. Wise effort is about cultivating skillful habits and lingering in the skillful habits of mind and heart, and setting down or practicing or living in ways that are simple enough so that we're not putting ourselves in situations in which we're just bound to be unskillful, right? And then when unskillfulness arises, feeling that so that the heart can learn from it and isn't seeding that unknowing, right? I mean, I have a pretty strong inner critic. So without mindfulness, what happens is I just walk around all day criticizing myself. Yeah, I'm not good enough here. I'm not good enough there. But with mindfulness, I know that, right? I know the heart that's being critical, right? And the heart that's criticizing here and criticizing there. And because there's this habit to include that, right? The heart is already including criticism with love, right? And just slightly pivoting so that I can attune to that, the quality of love that includes, right? And to remember, like, oh, this judging, this criticism is just a habit of nature. It's just a habit that is arisen because of the causes and conditions. Not because this is actually mine, right? I don't need to stake a claim in this criticism and call myself a critical person, right? Or I'm doomed or somehow hopeless to even be a good practitioner because of all this criticism. No, criticism becomes my most important teacher, self-criticism, right? Because I can learn. What can I learn from it? I can learn how to be loving. I can learn how to include. I can learn that this is just nature. I can see the gaps. I can recognize when the mind is not being self-critical and when the mind is being critical. So I can see that everything is arising and passing away, right? I can see in some situations, it's just a breeding ground for that kind of unskillfulness. And then I can do my best to take care in those situations, be more simple, right? And not feed that. And I can learn, oh yeah, in these situations, the heart is less critical. And maybe I can cultivate a more wise relationship to life as I learn how to be in life in new ways. So in the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, the Buddha, this is where the Buddha talks about how to establish mindfulness. So he's not telling us to do mindfulness, that controlling doing of mindfulness, but he talks about mind, he talks about these things. He talks about observing, right? Observing what it's like to be a human being, observing this, to observe, right? He instructs us to understand, to cultivate wisdom. He instructs us to relax, right? Because only the relaxed mind can be present. He instructs us to comprehend clearly and to practice reviewing. So, like when we care about being aware, we care about being aware before we take action, while we're taking action, and then we look back to see, oh, how did that go, sweetie? Did that work? You know, was it useful? Was it useful to? I think I can be aware while I'm with my phone and my computer and while talking to somebody, but then I look back, well, did that actually work? Well, what's the residue of that moment, right? What's it like right now? And then we learn that way, right? So it's not like a doing mindfulness, it's not a forcing mindfulness, but it's learning to observe, to understand, to relax, to review. You know, that's how we practice cultivating mindful awareness. Just take a moment and sit together. Taking a couple of deep breaths to let go of the words, trying to hold on to anything, trusting the learning that's already happened, and also trusting that this learning will continue to move through us. And wisdom will remember elements of the practice. And that will keep us engaged, keep us establishing confidence, making effort, and finding our way. Thank you for your practice today, everyone. May our practice be a benefit to all beings without exception.
This talk, like all programs at Common Ground, is offered freely in the spirit of generosity. To learn more about Common Ground and its programs, or if you would like to donate, please visit our website, www.commongroundmeditation.org.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.